This is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers for 78 years.
Since 1947.
It's how my day begins.
It's how this day begins.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now your host, Scott Walker.
And now joining us in studio, we have attorney John Day. How are you this morning?
I'm great, Scott. I hope you are.
I am good. Now, I understand there is a court decision of some sort that could really impact different motorists. It deals with big trucking companies or semi-trucks hauling big loads.
Yes. Yeah, it's a new court decision out of the United States Court of Appeals in Cincinnati. Just a brief refresher for folks who maybe don't remember their civics class. There are federal court state systems and state court systems, and the state court system is the one we're most familiar with, except when we're watching what the United States Supreme Court is doing. But in the federal system, there's the local federal courts called federal district courts. That's where trials take place. And then there are courts of appeals. So there's 12 different circuits in the federal court system where the courts of appeals are located. Tennessee is part of the 6th circuit that represents Tennessee, Kentucky, Ohio, and Michigan. And the federal court is for that 4-state area is based in Cincinnati, Ohio. So that court recently released a decision that impacts the rights of motorists who use our roadways and also trucking companies and people in the trucking industry.
Walk us through, first of all, how does a case end up in that courtroom? What takes place for that to happen first?
Well, this particular, let's use this case as an example. It's a case that where a woman was killed and her husband was injured. In Ohio, they were driving down a divided highway. There was construction ahead. When was the last time we saw that? Probably this
everywhere.
Morning, right? And so everybody was asked to merge into the right-hand lane. This person merged into the right-hand lane and began slowing to a stop when they were hit at a speed of 60 miles an hour or so from the rear by a tractor trailer.
And this car was almost at a standstill. Stop.
Yes, when they got hit. So the female occupant was killed. Her husband was injured. And they filed a lawsuit in federal court in what we call the Southern District. That's the lower half of Ohio federal court. The reason they were able to file that lawsuit in federal court is because they were Ohio residents, and the trucking company and the other entity that they sued, we'll get to that in a minute, were both from out of state. If everybody had been from Ohio, that lawsuit would have ended up in state court in Ohio. Even if one of the people who had been sued had been from Ohio, but everybody else who had been sued was from out of state, it would have ended up in state court. But because there was what we call diversity of citizenship, that is, the people bringing the lawsuits, the plaintiffs were from one state, and the people who were sued were from a different state, it could go into the federal court system, and that's what happened. The case was dismissed against one of the defendants, one of the entities that was sued, the freight broker, so there was an automatic right to appeal to the federal circuit court for the Sixth Circuit. Remember, Ohio's in the Sixth Circuit, so it went to the Federal Court of Appeals in Cincinnati. The next stop, if someone wants to appeal this result, would be the United States Supreme Court. The United States Supreme Court, as everybody knows, sits in Washington, D.C. Most of the cases it considers are at its discretion. That means they do not have to accept an appeal. They can just say no. They say no something like 4,000 times a year. Maybe more than that, where they are asked to take the case, they decline. And that means that the law of the court that made the decision at the Court of Appeals level is, quotation marks, the law of the land, or at least for that circuit, that 4-state area. So my guess is the United States Supreme Court will be asked to take a look at this case. for reasons I'll explain in a minute. And we won't know the answer to that decision, that is whether or not they'll take this case, until April or May of next year, which would, if they take it, it would be heard sometime after October 1 of 2026.
So why is this particular case so important? And if it's in Ohio, how does that impact other states like Tennessee?
Well, the decision for, I'll start with the last question first. It impacts us because we are part of the four-state area that makes up the Sixth Circuit. So that decision, if the Supreme Court doesn't take it, now applies to every federal court case and every state court case where the same issue is raised in four different states. Okay? So it's a big deal. It's what I'm going to say is, I'm using my air quotes here, new law. That is, there was a dispute of whether this would ultimately be the rule, and we now know what the rule is, and it's a big deal. The reason it's important to motorists requires a little bit of background. Let me give you that. We all know that, quite frankly, the old ad was America runs on trucks, and it does, right? I mean, the reason we have groceries in our grocery store, the reason we have gas at the gas stations, the reason we can go to Home Depot and buy what we want to is because there are trucks moving things from A to B. So there are lots and lots of trucks on the road 24 hours a day delivering essential goods that we all need. Unfortunately, some of those trucks get in wrecks. And when they get in wrecks, people, not just the truck driver, but sometimes the truck drivers too, of course, people get hurt. And why do they get hurt? Because trucks can have weight of up to 80,000 pounds. And when something that is 80,000 pounds runs into something that is 3,000 pounds, bad things are going to happen. So there are lots and lots of truck wrecks that take place on our streets and highways every single day, particularly at risk on interstate highways or other high-speed highways because the force, combining 65, 70 miles an hour and 80,000 pounds, as I said, bad things are going to happen. I've been doing trucking work. I tried my first trucking case in June of 1982. It was a tanker truck, a rear-end case. So what has happened over the years is that the federal limits, insurance limits on trucking companies have not been raised. Today and 25 years ago, truckers only had to carry $750,000 worth of insurance.
So it's been that number for 20 years.
Over 25 years.
Wow.
It has not been raised. There's been efforts to raise it, and certain lobbying groups have resisted that effort. The reason that's important is think of the cost of medical care just alone and what it's done over the course of the last 25 years. I'm working on a trucking case right now. The person who got hurt ended up in the intensive care unit at Vanderbilt. That's running $25,000 to $30,000 a day.
That's a lot.
And so if you get hurt in a truck wreck and you end up in the intensive care unit at Vanderbilt and you're there for a month, that $750,000 is gone. I think the math is that those limits would be have to be raised to either $3.2 or $3.5 million to be at the same level that they were when the $750,000 was insulated into our law. So there's many times, and let me say this too, the major trucking companies have much more insurance than that. If you look at the J.B. Hunts, if you look at the Werners, you look at the Averett Express, the Yellow Freight, all these, well, I think Yellow filed for bankruptcy. A lot of the big trucking companies are more than adequately insured. They understand that insurance is a cost of doing business, and they do a good job at it. Covenant is another one that is very adequately insured. But a lot of the independents, or the people that have the 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 truck operations, buy the minimum. And that's where people get hurt twice. If they get in a wreck that's not their fault, is caused by an 18-wheeler and the 18-wheeler doesn't have adequate insurance, the second time they get hurt is when they're stuck with medical bills or long-term life-threatening, life-altering problems, and they're basically on their own or, quite frankly, end up on government assistance. So we all end up paying for it. So what lawyers have done, and this is one of the things that drive people crazy about lawyers, is that the lawyers say, well, who else is responsible for this harm occurring? Who else contributed to cause this wreck? So I'm representing the person that got hurt. I'm looking at a trucking company that has an inadequate amount of insurance. One place where I would look is to the freight broker. Now, freight brokers, there's over 17,000 of them in the United States. And what they do is arrange for the movement of freight. They will work with a shipper who says, I've got to get this load of cantaloupe from Galveston, Texas to Middle Tennessee. Can you get me a trucking company to haul it? And the broker makes arrangements with the trucking company to pick up that load and deliver it to, say, a local produce shop here in Murfreesboro. The broker selects the trucking company. So the question is, does the broker do a good job selecting the trucking company for the haul? The shipper doesn't, in that circumstance, select it. The broker selects it. So what happened in this case involving the Coxes in Ohio is that when she got killed and her husband was hurt in this tractor-trailer wreck, her lawyers did an investigation and found out that the trucking company had a horrible safety background. 7 out of the 10 trucks that this trucking company ran were unsafe on the highways.
That's a big number.
Oh, it's outrageous. 7 out of 10. Yeah. So, now, these are, by the way, these are the allegations in the lawsuit. I can't tell you that they're true. They're the allegations of the lawsuit, and they're referred to in the Court of Appeals opinion. And they also allege that the driver of the truck was an unsafe driver that should have been known to the freight broker. So when they filed the lawsuit, they sued not only the trucking company, but they also sued the freight broker, saying, you negligently selected an unsafe motor carrier an unsafe motor carrier to get this freight from point A to point B, and therefore you should be partially responsible for what happened. The freight broker moved to dismiss the case against them, saying that's a federal law issue. Federal law, federal motor carrier law, preempts or trumps any state law claim for negligent hiring by a freight broker. So that claim cannot be brought. Two federal circuit courts had agreed with them. The 11th Circuit Court, which is based in Atlanta, and the 7th, based in Chicago, said, that's right, you can't bring those claims. Congress doesn't permit you to bring a claim against a freight broker. The 9th Circuit Court of Appeals, which is based in California, went the other way. They said, yes, you can bring those claims. And the federal district court in Ohio threw it out. They said, no, we're going to agree with what they said in Chicago and what they said in Atlanta. You cannot bring a claim against a freight broker. We do not agree with what the court said in California. This week, the 6th Circuit Court of Appeals, once again, Tennessee, Ohio, Michigan, and Kentucky, said, no, we're going to agree with California. We think the Congress did permit these type of claims to be asserted against a freight broker. So now there is what we call in the law a split of authority. It's even. We have two federal circuit courts, the 11th based out of Atlanta and the 7th based out of Chicago, saying, no, you can't bring this type of case. And that applies to all the states in those circuits, that ruling. And then we have our circuit and the California circuit that says, no, you can bring that type of case. This is a classic thing for the United States Supreme Court to review, because you've got smart people in all these judges who are making these decisions are smart, right? I mean, by definition. They've all gone through the Senate confirmation process. They're among the best legal minds in the country, and they've reached opposite conclusions based on the exact same reading of the law. And that will perhaps cause this issue to bubble up to the United States Supreme Court for a decision.
And with cases like this, what does this mean for local cases that may go through the court system here in Tennessee? Like, let's say it's another accident involving a semi-truck who has $750,000 in insurance on that truck when the wreck caused millions of dollars, I guess the equivalent of that, in damages. And we're talking lifetime consequences for maybe a family that was hit.
Right. What it'll mean is this. Any good lawyer representing the family who got injured or lost family members in that wreck will investigate the background of the trucking company that caused the wreck. And they will say, is this the type of trucking company that should have got this load? And is this something that a freight broker should have investigated before they put this shipper and the trucking company together? That information is available on a website. There's a big database where trucking companies have to report their wreck history. They have to report whether there's been safety violations found with their trucks. And all that information is stored on this huge federal database that anybody can look up. And the argument is that the freight broker should look at it too and not select a trucking company that has a poor safety record. So that's how it's going to affect us. It opens up the possibility that there may be another way to recover money for that family that had either serious injuries or lost a family member.
And what do you do in those cases where once you're in the courtroom, you suddenly realize, well, the company that hired or contracted with that truck driver, they didn't know the full story about the driver's past record of, you know, could be DUIs that he had or something, but they didn't realize that for some reason. What do you do in those cases where you learn that kind of stuff right in the middle of a courtroom?
Well, if everybody does their job, that wouldn't happen because you learn a lot well before that.
Yeah.
You know, because there's ways that you can do investigations into the companies involved and the people involved. I remember one case I had 20 years ago, Scott, where a truck crossed a railroad track with the signal, the lights flashing. I represented the two engineers in the cab who hit the side of that tanker truck. The tanker truck wrapped around the locomotive and my two clients burned to death in that crash. The one guy was found with his head in a cooler where he was trying to protect his head from the flames of this, because it was alcohol. It
yeah.
was a tanker trailer. It was just a horrible, horrible wreck. In that case, we discovered well before court that the driver of that rig had three different driver's licenses from three different states. So he was able to hide his tickets by every time he got too many tickets in one state, he would just go to another state and get a driver's license and use that on the road. But we found that out through investigation. The other thing this guy was doing that was really fascinating was he was driving cross country, and I can't remember exactly where he was going to or how many days he was allotted to drive that far, 3,000 miles. So I'm sure it was 3.5 or 4 days. But what he was doing is he would go a certain number of miles, and he had a girlfriend, unbeknownst to his wife, and he would stay with her for a couple days and then drive like heck.
To catch up for missed time?
Catch up for missed time. So, and then he falsified his logbooks to make it look like he was driving the appropriate number of hours per day. And that's just what, you know, lawyers who handle trucking cases know what to look for, and we have consultants that we work with to help us figure out the gaps in our knowledge to try to figure out whether people are following the rules. Truck drivers have strict rules about how many hours they can drive per day and when they have to take breaks and that sort of thing. And that's all part of the investigation that a good lawyer will do in a case like this.
Going back to that Supreme Court case, or the federal court case that you were talking about, those types of cases, those, I guess the outcome of them lasts for years. And you'll hear in different trials around the country, according to X versus Z in federal court, this, this, and this can happen or can't happen. What I'm saying is the outcome of court cases in a federal courtroom, how often are those used in just regular court cases, regular trials, whenever something pertains to what was in that federal courtroom that was either won or lost?
All the time. I mean, I guarantee you that this decision that just came down from the federal court in Ohio on Tuesday will be argued in some courtroom in Tennessee in the next 60 days.
That quickly?
Oh, yeah. Because those of us who do this type of work pay attention to this sort of thing.
Yeah.
We keep up with where the issues are being litigated in our area and, quite frankly, in the United States. Because even before this, our federal circuit court, the Sixth Circuit, decided this, we were arguing to local judges, Tennessee should follow the lead of the California court, not the Atlanta court, not the Chicago court, right? Yeah. Now, there was the local judge did not have to follow either one because there was a hole in the law. There was no direct ruling that would apply to a judge in Rutherford County on this issue. They could pick what they thought was fair and right. But now there is binding authority that addresses this issue for the Sixth Circuit.
So as of,
including Tennessee,
as of now, because of this court case, what does this equal? What does this mean for major trucking companies or small trucking companies and potential victims who get hit by a semi-truck?
First of all, for major trucking companies, it's not going to have much of an impact because the major trucking companies have always been adequately insured, right? And they get most of their freight contracts are going to be from big shippers who have their own freight brokers in-house. For instance, your radio station sells advertising. You have to make a decision. Do you have an in-house person who does it? Or do you hire a contractor to do it? And you make an economic decision. Is it better for me to get somebody who works for us full time? We pay them a salary. Maybe we give them a commission. Maybe we split it up between the two of them. But they're only working for us. Or I am confident there's an outside company who would be happy to sell advertising for your station on a commission basis. And you don't have to give them an office. They just go out and try to sell advertising for you. Same thing is true in the trucking industry. Nissan, I don't know what Nissan does, but I'm going to guess that they don't use a freight broker. They have an internal team, or they may have a really big company to make sure that their cars and trucks get to be where they're supposed to be on time. That's true with all the major shippers, right? It's the smaller shippers, the more occasional shippers, who are looking for this load to be picked up or that load to be picked up. They're the ones who are going to be more likely to use one of the over 17,000 freight brokers in the country. The biggest impact is going to be for freight brokers because now there's going to be increased pressure on them to select trucking companies to haul loads that have a good safety record, because they face potential liability for not doing so. It's going to hurt trucking companies that have poor safety records.
Sure.
Because they're going to be less likely, other things being equal, they're going to be less likely to get loads from independent freight brokers because the independent freight brokers are going to be afraid to place those loads because of fear of their own liability.
When you look at let's say you've got five different trucking companies, and out of those five, number four is the one that hit your client in an accident. When you look at that truck and you look at the load they were carrying, let's say the load came from some huge luxury brand out there, so that company insured the load that was in the back of that trailer. Does that insurance also factor into the total insurance that this truck had over it? And is that factoring in also to the person who was injured? Because that load, the heaviness of it, could have led to part of the damage of the accident.
No, in the ordinary case, what's being shipped, whether it's cotton candy or steel, doesn't make any difference to the potential liability of the trucking company or the shipper. What makes a difference is whether the truck driver negligently operated the truck or whether the trucking company negligently selected the driver. That's what impacts the liability of the trucking company.
And you've seen a lot of accidents involving semi-trucks over the years, and I can just imagine those accidents are typically a lot worse for the victim in the case, the car that was hit, because, man, like you were talking, the weight of some of these trucks is just insane when you look at it on the roadway. It's hard to believe some of these weigh as much as they do.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, 80,000 pounds, I think, that's off the top of my head, the max capacity for a lot of these trucks. Of course, they're overweight vehicles and oversized vehicles that can be even greater than that. But it's a whole lot of mass moving forward down the road at 70 miles an hour. And that's why, you know, there are lots and lots and lots of wonderful professional truck drivers out there who understand their responsibilities on the road, who follow the rules. There are trucking companies that, you know, insist that their drivers follow the rules, and they monitor them very carefully, and those people are to be applauded. But it's like in every other industry, there are certain folks who are trying to shave a little here, save a buck there, and then you end up with horrific results.
I got to take a short break, but when we come back, let's talk a little bit more about cutting those corners, what shaving the amount of insurance they're paying for, what that actually means for the vehicle that's hit and maybe the family of four that's inside that vehicle. You're tuned to WGNS, and again, we're going to take a short break, and then we will be right back with attorney John Day.
Stop and save. Well, those deals never seem to stop.
Hi, I am Tina. You never know what you may find at the Habitat Restore.
Hi, I'm Wendy.
Hey, this is Rocky. You never know what you'll find at the Habitat Restore.
We have doors.
Shopping at the Restore.
Yes, we have doors. We have interior and exterior doors available.
Hey, come check them out.
Shopping at the Restore, yeah.
The Habitat Restore, 850 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Come see us.
From lift kits to tires, Tire World has the experts and the knowledge to get it done.
This is Gator with Tire World Off-Road. We're your local Rough Country dealer. So when you're ready to add some character to your rig, ask for Gator at Tire World on Memorial Boulevard.
This is Peter Demas, and our family is inviting your family to come eat with us at Demas's restaurant. Demas's has had a bar when we opened 35 years ago. And we've done the exact same thing with our bar menu that we've done with our food menu. We get higher quality items, higher quality cocktails. Again, some people just want a drink with their meal, where they might be able to get a drink to complement their meals. You need to check it out, so come on over right now. Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street. We really focus on value.
Celebrate Christmas in July, this Saturday at Animal City in Murfreesboro. From 2 until 5 in the afternoon, bring your pet for a festive photo with Santa. Just a $5 donation supports the Community Blessing Box for Pets right out front. It's a joy, jingle, and a chance to give back. Join the fun at 919 Northwest Broad Street, Animal City, this Saturday, where pets meet Christmas in July.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Before that break, we were asking or thinking about that question as far as the amount of insurance a trucking company has And what does that mean for an accident victim who is hit by one of these big rigs if the company doesn't have enough insurance to cover the cost of their entire, you know, family of four in the hospital?
What it means is that if there's nobody else responsible for the wreck, and the, let's assume that the family as a whole has $1 million in medical bills, and the trucking company only has $750,000 worth of insurance, that's it. The most they can collect is $750,000, and they've got to try to figure out what to do next. A lot of these small trucking companies don't have anything to go after. Legally speaking, Scott, a person is responsible for whatever harm they cause. But if they don't have an adequate amount of liability insurance, then the only thing you can look at is their assets. And a lot of the small trucking companies simply don't have them. I'll give you an example, a case I had a couple of years ago. A trucking company had $1 million worth of insurance. A 16-year-old girl was hit as a pedestrian, run over and killed in downtown Nashville. That trucking company had 18 trucks. But they had no assets. All the trucks were leased. They, you know, they got a Rolodex, but they don't have anything that the family can go after. Then the family's on their own. So using the hypothetical we just talked about, $1 million worth of medical bills, let's assume health insurance paid for those bills. You collect the $750,000 from the trucking company. There's no more money. That $750,000 first has to go to repay your health insurance carrier for the money they paid for the medical bills. And that's called subrogation. So they have to be paid, and the lawyer has to be paid for doing the work. At the end of the day, there's just no money there. So if mom or dad can no longer work, or they've got ongoing medical needs, they're just in the ditch. No pun intended.
You know, I can't imagine that, because if you do have a family of four, and each of them are seriously injured, $250,000 per family member to cover medical bills is nothing these days, especially if you have the ongoing cost of rehabilitation or, you know, years of pain and suffering down the road. That would just be horrible.
Well, it is.
And it happens.
It is. And people, as I mentioned, they ultimately end up, let's assume they can't go back to work. In the United States, most of us, or many of us, get our health insurance from our employer. Can't go back to work, you lose your health insurance. At some point, you'll be broke enough that you can get on 10-care. So you'll be able to get your medical bills paid through society, through your tax dollars, they'll be paid. People end up going on food stamps. They can get maybe Social Security disability, which is very, very, very difficult to live on.
Are you ever amazed at how quickly somebody's life can turn upside down, and what you were just describing, that's their new normal?
I am no longer amazed, because I've seen it happen too many times.
I bet.
And I'm thankful every day that it hasn't happened to me, because the fact of the matter is, it could. I mean, I don't know how many thousand people I've represented in 44 years, Scott, but it is thousands. And not a single one of them woke up the day they got hurt and thought, it's going to happen to me today. Not a single one. And even the next day, they can't believe it happened. So no, all of us are at risk for something serious happening that can affect us forever and the whole family tree, quite frankly.
Yeah. And then once one of these accidents happen, let's say the husband wasn't injured, the wife was seriously injured. Well, then that husband, his life changes greatly, because he suddenly becomes a caretaker for his wife, maybe for the rest of her life. He can't work like he used to.
Well, and the kids, they have children, and that, even if mom is just injured under that scenario, that affects that relationship and their long-term future. I mean, I recently represented someone whose adult son was unmarried, was hurt bad in a wreck, and will never be able to work again. Mom has had to step in at age 68, and she is now caring for her child.
It is surprising to me how fast somebody's life can change and go in a totally different direction that they never expected. And the sad part about it is that happens a lot. It happens every day, especially once you look at the number of accidents that we have in Tennessee. But those things happen all the time.
Odds are something horrible happened on the interstate between here and Nashville this morning.
Yeah.
You know, and if it didn't happen today, it'll happen tomorrow because there's just too much traffic, too many people in a hurry going too many places. And it is a fact. And once again, I'm sure everybody listening is thankful every single day that they and their loved ones aren't in that situation. Make sure you feel the same way tomorrow.
Yeah. Again, Attorney John Day with us on the air. And if anybody has any questions or they want to learn more, johndaylegal.com, I guess, would be the best place to start.
Yes. Yeah. That's you can reach me via email there, or our telephone numbers are listed there. We'd be honored to speak with you.
Well, thank you for joining us. And in the future, let's talk about something else interesting. That's
thank
good.
You. Thank you, Scott. Wear your seatbelt. And everybody else out there, too. Be safe.
Hi, this is Tina Fox at the Rutherford Farmers Co-op. Come see us for all your lawn and garden needs. Also, if you're looking for that great gift idea, please come see us. If you're looking for that perfect outfit or a wedding gift or baby gift, come see us at the Rutherford Farmers Co-op. And if you haven't heard, we also carry the rain chains if you're looking for something to replace your old gutter or put somewhere where you can't put a gutter. Come see us at the Rutherford Farmers Co-op.